Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 117 for December 2nd, 2008. The Delicious Podcast. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your contribution. We couldn't do TWiT without it.
We're going to do this the way that our forefathers did.
Yeah. It is. It's a forefathers. Exactly.
Just like the pilgrims for the first Thanksgiving wore, you know, wired headsets and, you know, mobility processors. And
wow. It is kind of like that.
It's pretty clear, though. I think everybody's got a pretty good connection.
Can I just say it's good to have the four of us back together again?
Yay.
Yay. So, by the way, cast to the four winds, because Alex, you're in Japan, right?
Yes.
So we got New Mexico, Boston, California, and New Mexico and Japan.
It's awesome. This is this week in all over the world.
This world in Macintosh. We've got tendrils expanding out. None shall escape our grasp. And phase three commences.
Oh, dear. What are you doing in Japan for those who are tuning in and haven't been paying attention over the past few weeks?
I am coordinating visual effects for a movie called Memoirs of a Teenage Amnesiac.
And, is that true? Or are you joking?
Yeah, based on a book called Memoirs of a Teenage Amnesiac, and it's being Hans Kenosa, who did Conversations with the Women, and Kwesi Collison, who's the visual effects supervisor, asked me to come on out, and so we're actually gonna, the Pixel Corps will be doing visual effects for the film. There's probably about 160 shots to do for the film, and I mean some stuff real simple and some stuff more complicated, and so I'm out here to make sure that we don't bite off more on the set than we can chew in post. it's fun. The crew, the Japanese crew is so fast. I mean, I've just never seen anything like it. So we're having a great time, and I'm in Roppongi, Tokyo, and I'm going to be here for the next month.
Roppongi is a neighborhood.
Yes. It's a neighborhood inside of Tokyo, and it is probably, you know, the embassies are all here, and it's also, ironically, a big club scene, evidently right up the street, and there's just a lot. It's not, you know, I guess Shibuya is where, I mean, I was there yesterday, and it was, it's what you think of when you think of Tokyo, with just like lights and signs and everything everywhere. But this is still pretty out there, but it's not, it's a little bit more subdued, and I'm having a great time.
And of course, you have so much bandwidth that we can Skype you, and it actually sounds better than when you're in San Francisco. So that's
it does.
It's amazing.
It leaves my little T1 way behind.
It's kind of amazing.
First thing I do almost. Anytime I get a connection, the first thing I do is I go up to speedtest.net and I just see what I'm
right.
getting.
Me too.
And it is 24 megabits up and down.
Up and down?
Up and down. 24
on
megabits.
On your phone!
Unbelievable.
Yeah, you hit the button. When you go to iTunes to buy like Heroes or something like that, you know, it's 1.5 gigabytes or whatever, and it takes like 10 minutes.
Wow.
You know, it just sips right down, and it's pretty solid. It's never, in fact, I've been watching through iStat menu. I've been watching the stats, and even though it's sustained at 24, I think I'm getting at times peaks at 50 to 60 megabits a second.
And this is in a hotel.
Yeah, it's an apartment comp. It's like a it's like a resident apartment thing, because I'm here for a month. So,
well, as if this weren't enough of a challenge, we're going to try to add one more name to the mix. Will Shipley, William John Shipley, yeah, from Delicious Monster, that created the incredible Delicious Library. And in fact, his programming styles created a whole new way of talking about Mac software. They call it the Delicious Generation. Will, are you there?
Yeah.
It's amazing. We finally got him on. Hi, Will.
Patty.
Welcome to Mac Break Weekly. On the line with us also, as I mentioned, Scott Bourne from the TWIP Photo folks, This Week in Photography, twipphoto.com. And he's in New Mexico, Scott?
I'm in Socorro, New Mexico, leading a bird photography workshop. And to that end, I do want to let you know that, Leo, I got a hard out in about 60 minutes.
Good. So does everybody. Also, Andy Inaco from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waster Bandwidth. Hi, Andy.
Hello.
And we were just talking to Alex Lindsay, who is in Japan. He's in Tokyo working on a movie.
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa. So if you direct your browsers to your hymnals to mbwideas.com, you'll see quite a few stories. The biggest, I think, Apple recommends Mac users install antivirus software.
I saw that. That's kind of, well, they're being slight about it, but yeah.
They put out a tech note, a knowledge base article. And
they didn't exactly call the major media networks and say, hey, you should do this.
But they must have known. I mean, well, maybe not, because they put it out November 21st, and everybody's just kind of figured it out now. I guess it took somebody to notice it and then put it out to the Mac media. Apple says don't all use the same antivirus either.
Do we have more than one? It's like, how many antivirus?
There's two.
There's several. Apple recommends Intego Virus Barrier XS, Symantec Norton Antivirus 11, McAfee Virus Scan for Mac, there also is another one that they didn't recommend, ClamX AV, which is free.
Is this just a CYA to make sure that?
Yeah, I think
make sure that someone doesn't say, well, you know, I can see a class action suit if something came out and Apple has been, you know, kind of arrogant about there's no viruses, and people will say, well, you misled me, blah, blah, blah.
Well, wait, it really is long overdue, don't you think?
I don't know. Are you going to run out and put an antivirus on your Mac?
I'm not sure, but I really think that Apple has been just daring everybody to start creating exploits for macOS. We all know that there have been vulnerabilities. We all know that so far it appears that there haven't been any pieces of malware in the wild, but that's not for lack of opportunities. I mean, I really think that they are trying. It's wise to start thinking about this now rather than wait 3-4 months, even a year, even two, whenever that first piece of, you know, Apple Remote Access security hole software comes in and people realize that, oh, so my machine has, according to this software, my machine has been vulnerable for the past 3 months. Well done, Apple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think that it is becoming more of an issue as you see the stats of Apple's percentage becoming larger and larger of the overall market. They're bigger target. Yeah.
I think part of the problem's got to be that, I mean, how do you write virus software for viruses that don't exist yet? You know, like, is it really effective?
Yeah. What are they scanning for? I mean, that's a very good point.
Well, there are.
Well, it's either really easy or really hard. Yeah.
Well, there are already like markers, like in Mac hacking boards, there are exploits that have been written sort of as proofs of concept. Like there is there's a way to get root access via Apple Script, via Apple Remote Access. I think that hole, I have to double check to find it. I'm trying to remember whether this is one of those holes that got closed in 10.4, but then reopened again in 10.5. And so there have been bits of code that have been seen as sort of samples of here's how you would get this working. Maybe such a tool would simply say, oh, well, we know that there are 18 really important security holes that a Trojan horse would exploit. You currently have 18 of those open. Would you like to figure out how to close them?
Go ahead.
I was just going to close by saying I'm just glad to see that we are putting this kind of security at least within the cultural consciousness of Mac users, because I think it should be there.
I always worry about this from the simplest standpoint, and I know that, you know, it's probably crazy, but I always think to myself, what actual motive and incentive do the antivirus companies have to stop all viruses?
Brian Krebs, who discovered this in this, he writes the really excellent security fix column in the Wall Street Journal. He's the guy first to notice this. He said he's been running Symantec's antivirus for nearly 2 years, and it's never said anything, which makes you wonder, is it doing anything? He also mentions...
Yes, it's collecting his money every month.
Really. He mentions SecureMac, which offers a free Trojan detection tool. I guess, Will, if you were going to write a virus for the Mac, it would have to be elegant, you know, have a certain look and feel to keep up with it.
And everybody would want to have it.
The delicious... yeah, exactly. The delicious generation virus, you know.
We heard this... We heard there's going to be a new virus out on Wednesday, so we camped out on Monday at the Apple...
The line.
It's got the brushed metal look on it. Well, I mean, it probably wouldn't spread unless, you know, it had some sort of, you know, lickiness to it. Otherwise, you know, why would anybody get it? I mean, who would want it?
I think that might be one of the reasons you don't see a lot of viruses on the Mac platform. Do you think Mac users are less likely to do the kinds of things that cause problems?
I think sometimes one of the observations that I have at Macworld, I was at a Windows conference years ago, and the one thing that I noticed was there was a lot more administrators, and I realized that, you know, in many ways, you know, we think of Macs being easy to use, but I think partially because you can dig into them, you go to a Macworld and you really see more geeks. You know, you have more people who are really into their personal computer, not managing lots of computers. And I do think that oftentimes, I think there's a big generalization, but a lot of PC users are people who aren't, you know, they bought a cheaper computer, they turned it on and it's working, and they don't fiddle with it as much. And I think that actually leads to more behavior that would lead to viruses.
I agree. I think that Mac users are more likely to be running the tools that would fix these problems than Windows users would be. I mean, I'm sure that everybody in this chat is the unofficial tech support for the entire family or the extended family. And how many times have you said, yeah, you know, every time in the past 3 years that Windows XP has said, hey, there's a new service pack available, and you said, no, that's not worth my time, you really should have done that.
Yeah, I think Mac people in general stay more up to date with software. And to be fair to Windows, I don't think, you know, if Windows users had stayed current with Microsoft's patches, I think they really aren't at as huge a risk. But the problem is that in general, they don't stay current. And so they don't get the patches. I mean, if you stay current with Apple's patches, you're generally pretty well off. I mean, I've never gotten any problems on my Mac, so
I'll be honest, don't tell anybody, especially not my antivirus advertiser on the radio show, but I haven't run an antivirus on Windows or Mac in ages, and it's really because my behavior, I know what to do, right? And I think if you are paying attention, and I do think more Mac users pay attention, you're less likely to get one. Maybe it's a prejudice, but I just have this image of Windows users as being just kind of, ooh, let's download the latest pictures of Anna Kournikova.
Well, I think that there's definitely a section of the, probably the same size section of Windows users, you know, the 8 to 10%, that are as geeky and as into their computers as there are on the Mac side. But I think that there's, you know, 90% of them that aren't. And I think that's what allows this, you know, creates an environment for this to really move around.
Well, in any event, I don't feel the sudden need to do it. I imagine Apple will stop ribbing Vista for its virus-prone nature. Now they've got to take those ads out. In fact, that was the very first switch ad, was the one where a PC gets a sniffle and falls over.
Yeah, I think we're going to see like a twist on like Clinton's response to like drug allegations, saying, "Okay, there might have been some exploits in my OS's past, but we were never infected."
I'm still trying to find the Anna Kournikova pictures.
yes, you'd be the one, wouldn't you?
I'll send you a chat link, good friend.
Okay, thank you, man. Thank you.
I date myself when I say that because that's an old Windows virus, and I don't think anybody's looking for Anna Kournikova pictures anymore. I don't know. They're the newer pictures of somebody or of somebody else, but it's the same idea, same thing. Anyway, I guess the word has gone forth from Cupertino, you know, use an antivirus. This is a windfall for Norton and McAfee.
I still think it's a lawyer. This was more from the lawyers than from the tech section.
No need to tell all our listeners, run out and get one.
Right.
But let me ask you this.
Apple didn't put out a big press release. They just quietly put it in there because that's the way you would do it if you're just kind of covering your butt.
If you were to tell them to get one, Leo, of these that are listed on the Apple news site or a tech site, which one would you prefer?
No, I like Intego. I think they make good stuff. Their firewall is very good, and I think they're a good company. I have historic animus towards Symantec and McAfee. They just made such bloated products for Windows that I hesitate. It always made me nervous, the idea of putting those on a Mac. But I think ultimately, Clam XAV, which is absolutely free and open source, it's not like there's a whole lot to keeping your signatures up to date for the Mac. So anyone will work as long as it has a decent engine. I'd say go get Clam XAV. Apple says Apple does not make any single recommendation.
In the year 2754, they'll have version 2 because that'll have all the new updates.
Yeah, exactly. It's Apple support document HT2550 if you want to read it yourself. Summary, learn about antivirus utilities available for the Mac OS. It was put out on the 21st of November, last modified, actually December 2nd. Apple encourages the widespread use of multiple antivirus utilities so that virus programmers have more than one application to circumvent, thus making the whole virus writing process more difficult. Here are some available antivirus utilities, American Intego, Symantec, and McAfee. And that's it. I mean, it's not a lot to it. In fact, it doesn't. It really, if you read it carefully, the recommendation is not that you get an antivirus, but that nobody buy just, you know, nobody all buy the same one. Widespread use. I guess no, that's true. They say the widespread use of multiple antivirus utilities.
Okay, well, let's just have everybody with the names beginning from A to L. You get Symantec.
Yeah, we should do that.
And you know,
I'm surprised Steve didn't do that. The Mapple, the king of Mapple. Did you see that? I loved that.
That was funny. Simpson's take on the Apple Store.
Yeah,
that
Apple.
Oh man, absolutely spot on.
If the mixer weren't down and I had full capabilities, I'd play it for you right now, thereby violating every possible known trademark. But it's not out of fear. It's not out of lack of courage. It's merely out of lack of the capability to play it for you.
But, I'd like to see it, but of course I can't in Japan.
You can't.
Oh.
You can't get to YouTube.
You can get to. Oh, is it on YouTube? No, I didn't see it there.
Until Fox,
I think
Fox
I went to the link
down.
And I went to Hulu. Yeah, we've ruined everything now.
You can't do it on Hulu. Yeah,
Hulu Fox. You know, and there's actually a great little application that fixes that. That I just didn't have on at the moment. It's called Hotspot Shield, and by Anchor Free Software. That's not my recommendation for the week, but it's it basically blocks your IP, VPNs your IP to the U.S.
And you know what? You can do it on YouTube. Hulu has put it on YouTube on the Hulu channel.
Okay, there you go.
So unless YouTube is also blocking.
Well, let's find out.
Yeah, and there's two different, it's really very funny. Lisa walks in and to the Mapple store. I wish I could play this for you. It's very fun. Go see it. It's on the Hulu.com channel on YouTube. In fact, it's in high quality, so you can actually see it beautifully.
I wonder how that works with Hulu, with international, where they can't put it on their own website, but if they put it on YouTube, well, there it goes.
yeah. Well, I was going to say don't do it now, but if you've got 26 megabits, you could probably do it now. We wouldn't even notice that you were watching video.
Exactly.
So I want to talk to you a little bit, Will, about what's up with Delicious. I know the latest version of Delicious Library came out a few months ago, and you're probably relaxing on the beach, enjoying the fruits of your labor.
God, I wish. That would be nice.
We're going to do that in a second. Also, there's much more Mac news where that came from. This is a big week for Mac news, including Juiced, a special deal on Fusion, which is still good today, Cyber Monday, so you might want to run out, and a new landmark for the Apple Store for the iPhone. Before we do that, though, I want to mention our good friends at audible.com, audible.com/MacBreak. That's the place to go to get a special deal. A credit toward any book in the Audible library, 51,000 titles. I've just finished a wonderful. I go back and forth between fiction and nonfiction, serious and light. And I just finished a really great classic Larry Niven sci-fi novel called Protector, that was just a gripping a story. I just couldn't put it down. It feels a little dated, you know. I mean, it's when you read sci-fi where people are smoking cigarettes. You know, it comes from a different era. But at the same time, this comes from the era when sci-fi was really more about the ideas than it was about plot or characterization. It was about, you know, interesting ideas. And Niven's always been full of really interesting hard science ideas. So I really enjoyed Protector. Now, Andy, we didn't let you give your recommendation last week, so I'm going to do two recommendations this week and let you do yours because I put you off last week.
Oh, that's okay. But it's good that this recommendation goes out sooner rather than later, because it is a holiday tradition in the Anatko household, or at least not my parents. I don't think they were a big fan of books on tape, but myself. Sometime shortly after Thanksgiving, I get out and load up onto my iPod Patrick Stewart's audiobook of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah.
It is an absolute magnificent performance. Now, the thing is that the only trouble with this story is that you have heard it so many times, diluted through so many like cartoon filters and the Married with Children version and the Happy Days version, that you kind of forget how cool the original story actually is. And Patrick Stewart fell in love with this book early on in his career, and he has been performing this as a live one-man show for years and years and years. So by the time he sat down or stood up to record the audiobook, you're seeing him making every single choice that he thinks needs to be made. He has worked through every piece of material. He does all the voices. It's cut down a little bit, but it includes the most important part of any good version of A Christmas Carol, in that it understands that Scrooge is not the villain of the piece. He is the hero of the piece.
That's right.
And it's just magnificent. Now, the only drawback is that it's less than 2 hours long, and especially when you get the freebies from Audible, you want to basically stick them for the 9-hour unabridged version of anything. But honest to God, I originally bought this on cassette, and then I bought it on Audible. And if it were possible to wear down electrons stored on a flash drive, I would have worn out this copy.
I bet he does such a good job. Again, I would play it for you if I could. I don't have the capability today, but this is a good reason to go to audible.com/MacBreak. You can actually browse and listen to any excerpts from any story, just to see if it sounds like something you're interested in. Some wonderful, wonderful holiday stuff on there. In fact, there's quite a few Christmas carols. You could listen to all the different ones, but I think Patrick Stewart's going to have the best reading.
There you go.
audible.com/MacBreak. Join today. Get your free book. You're going to love it. We do. I couldn't sleep last night, and I didn't want to turn on the light. So I put on the earphone, wake up my wife. So I put on the earphones, and I finished that Larry Niven novel, and it's just great. And by the way, a great way to go to sleep is to listen to somebody read. And it's very easy if it's on an iPod or a Sansa or any one of the players to rewind back to where you fell asleep. So.
Now, do your earphones hurt your ears when you wake up in the morning?
Usually I kind of like get sleepy, when I know I've missed several pages, I just go, and I turn it off and I take out the earplugs. But I could go to sleep with my earplugs in. I have a few times. I love it. I'm an Audible fanatic. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Will Shipley, what is going on? Delicious 2 came out, am I right, just a few months ago?
I've actually forgotten the actual launch date now, which is kind of scary. I think it was, like May or June or something.
Oh, that long ago.
Yeah, I think. But
if people don't know it, go to delicious-monster.com. It is a really fantastic way to catalog your books and your music and your DVDs, to know where you've lent them. And it just looks so beautiful. It uses the eyesight to read the barcode, so it populates quickly. Really nice package, and it really did kind of I think set the tone for Mac software going forward. They really do call this generation of Mac software the delicious generation, thanks to you, Will. You don't still program in a coffee shop, do you?
Yeah, I do actually. I really have to thank Mike Mattis, my old business partner, who is now works at Apple. He's one of 9 interface people at Apple, and did a bunch of work on the iPhone and a bunch of work on laptop. But he did sort of a lot of the nice, lickable look of the app is really his work. He did the version 1, and he sort of roughed out some ideas for version 2, and then he left the company to go work for Apple. So I've sort of, in a sense, been riding on his coattails for 2 years.
Well, you wrote some code.
I wrote all the code. He's not a coder.
Yeah. I mean, you could take credit for the code.
I'm pretty happy about it.
There's got to be beauty under the hood as well as to the eye.
Yeah. But no, unfortunately, I haven't been able to relax since releasing it. Cause,
what are you working on?
Well, there were so many. I added way too many features to version 2, and I knew I was doing it, but I just couldn't think of what to cut. And so some of them honestly just didn't quite work right. And, you know, I thought they did, and they didn't. And so I was just like, I felt super guilty because, you know, you feel like crap when you sell somebody something and then it doesn't really work for them the way you said. So I've been slaving away trying to get patches out. I think I'm at a pretty happy spot right now. I mean, obviously every program has some bugs, but I don't feel like I've, you know, lied to people or anything. So, so the current patch level, I'm pretty proud of, actually.
Good. I think that's normal, especially for a smaller shop. But you know, when you look at Vista, which is the opposite of a small shop, I mean, it's just the way it is. This is the way software is these days.
Well, how hard is the recognition of for the barcodes?
You know, it's really interesting. People have started trying to do this now, and it's one of the parts of the program that, you know, people just sort of take for granted. It's actually really hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever worked on in my life. It's really hard math combined with hard code. It's funny because, you know, it seems like one of those things where you just go, oh, that's really clever, but, you know, you don't think, oh, it's probably also nigh impossible to do. But now everybody wants to do it because with, like, especially with the Android phone coming out, one of the apps that won the big contest that Google sponsored saying, you know, come up with clever ideas. In fact, two of the apps were these apps where you scan in a barcode and then look up the item, which is, of course, a great idea on a phone. I mean, it's a pretty obvious and awesome idea. But the problem is, it's almost impossible to read a barcode unless you have a camera that focuses, and most phone cameras just don't focus. They can't focus that close. They can't focus, you know, something that's like 6 inches from the lens. And
you really have to get that close. You can't just take, because I was about to say, I take pictures of books all the time. I mean, you know, and I always think of Delicious Library every time I'm in a bookstore because I don't
this has been a dream app of yours for years.
I keep on talking about it. I'm like, you know, well, they got to make it. They got to make it Delicious Library because, you know, for me, you know, I don't want to. I know this is horrible because the Borders bookstore is like a block away from my office, but I'll be sitting there and I don't want to carry them around, and so I just take pictures of them and then I go home. I just go home and get them later. You know, and I check if they're on Audible. Like if it's a lot of text, like if it doesn't have pictures, there's no reason to buy a thing with text. You know, so if there's no pictures, it's not worth buying. And so, but otherwise, I still want to carry these big, usually I get big picture books. And so I don't really want to carry them around for the rest of the, however time, whatever I'm doing. And so I'm just dying to be able to take them. So I take pictures of the covers all the time to remind myself, oh, I should get that later. And I just keep on thinking, man, if I could just, you know, it would destroy a bookstore, but if I could just take a picture of that, of the barcode and order it from Amazon while I'm standing there.
You know, I had an interesting experience in a brick and mortar bookstore a few days ago, and I really celebrate the independent bookstore. I really do. I don't celebrate Barnes and Noble particularly, but I think bookstores like Powell's, which is gone, alas, Stacy's, we have Copperfields up here. There's a wonderful one on the peninsula.
Denver, there was the Tattered Cover.
Yeah, they're just these great bookstores, independent bookstores, which I think are very important for the health of books. However, I went into my local independent bookstore the other day, and I guess I'm spoiled now with typing a search term into Amazon because it was hard to find the book. I couldn't find it, so I went to the desk. I said, "Do you have this book?" It took her literally 4 or 5 minutes to determine it wasn't in stock. She said, "I can order it for you, and I can have it for you in a couple of days." And what it really made me feel like is, and by the way, the experience wasn't very pleasant. The service wasn't very good. They were a little surly. They took their time. You know, it felt, you know, it just didn't feel welcoming. And I thought the only thing that keeps a bookstore open is that service, that sense of this is a great place to hang out. Because otherwise, I could have had this book, you know, overnighted to me from Amazon in 30 seconds. This is going to be bad for bookstores, and they've got to find a way to.
Well, and I And I think that they've made a huge mistake with, you know, this with Google, you know, doing its scanning process, because, you know, I bought more books from the Google at Google, you know, the handful of books that are up there, you know, we'll search and we'll see these, you know, there was this one on mechanical structures and, you know, the whole book is on Google, you know, it's been scanned or whatever. But I bought it.
I don't think that's a problem. I think that who wants to read it online?
I can flick through it. That's the last advantage of going to the bookstore is I can flick through the book. I don't need to feel the pictures. I just want to see what's in it. And so I can flick through the entire book, just flick, you know, looking around. And of course, I'm not going to view it on my computer. I mean, I am going to buy the book, you know, and I think that was a big mistake for them to kind of push people back.
I just think that bookstores will always have a really good role in that they present books in the context that the humans like to locate new books with. It's great when people recommend books to you. It's great for Amazon to say the people who bought this title and also tend to like this book too, and based on the other stuff you've bought, you might like this title. But there's something about going into a real bookstore and just having no clue whatsoever what you want to read, but you just know that you want to get a book and read something, and then just browsing. I don't think there's an online solution that can really bring that experience.
I think we may be the last
generation that says that. I mean, like, I agree with you, and I think we all agree, but I also feel like our kids are going to all be like, you know, just why would I want to have this physical thing that I'm dragging around with me when I could just have the bits? And
I agree with that, but I just don't think that online bookstores are delivering that great experience of not knowing what you want but wanting something.
I think it's still way too digital.
That's what I'm saying.
I find the exact opposite. My biggest problem with Amazon is that it tells me other books that are like the book I'm looking at, and that's very expensive for me. You know, I'll go into a thing like I want to research something, and I'll end up with 10 books and then I just get them all, and then they come into the office, and I find out the three or four from my.
I bring this up as it was an eye opening experience for me. It was really the first time I felt like, because I'm a big supporter of these bookstores again, but I felt like boy, this was kind of not a satisfying experience, and I'm going to think twice before I go through it again. I wanted to buy 4 copies of this book for my friends that night at a dinner party. And, you know,
the only independent bookstore, I mean, the only bookstore that I really go into with any real excitement, I guess, is there's an architectural bookstore. It's called Bibliograph, I think, in Berkeley on 4th Street. And it's, you know, it is just this incredible collection of architectural and design books. But it's a very picture-based. And they find books that, I mean, I don't even know if they're on Amazon. You know, they're obscure publishers and everything else. And to me, that's what the niche is. You know, that's what, and they're busy all the time, and they, you know, very good service and, you know, everything else. But I think that's what you have to be looking at is finding that niche of not even being a general bookstore. I think it's being a specific, really covering a certain area that makes sense.
Well, you know, you're going to help kill it, Will, with the portable barcode scanning. I do love that feature, the G1, by the way. It's a really neat ability to scan your stuff and at least see the price, check the price.
Well, it's not even just, that's huge. That's the real equalizer. Go ahead.
That's what I'm kind of excited about is, you know, because it goes way beyond books. Like Amazon sells, you know, breakfast cereal. And so, you know, like what excited me was the idea that I could go into a stereo shop and the guy could be like, well, this has got dual THX outs with a triple overpass and it's a deal at 400.
Right.
And I could just go, yeah, let me just bleep. Huh? You know, I can get this overnighted with free shipping for $200, and also you're lying.
I did that. There's this camera store right around the corner from our office, and it is the worst. It's called Discount Camera, and it's
not that place.
So these guys are the shysters. I mean, they're shysters, you know. And I walk in and I say I want to get an LX3 because I couldn't find it anywhere else, and I couldn't get it delivered, and I was leaving that day for Japan, and I knew they had it, and I knew I was gonna have to deal with them. And I walk in and I go, I want an LX3, and they said it'll be $549.
Oh.
And I was like, really? I said, because the list price is $499. They said, what list price are you talking about? And I'm like, the list price that Panasonic, you know, posted. And then I go, and B&H has it for $419, and it's on Amazon for $449. And that's what, you know, that's what I'll
What price did you end up getting?
I think I paid $470 for it. I knew there was going to be a tax of the fact that I need to leave You know, but what I did is I immediately just said, these are the prices. And I just walked away. I said, I'll get that lens filter. Just like, you know, I don't want to. And then but before I left, of course, they're like, well, okay.
Right.
You know,
you have to do a whole dance. Yeah.
But you can really hold, especially, you know, that kind of thing. You can really hold people's feet to the fire when you can, when you have that information right in front of you on your iPhone.
Yeah. No kidding.
But you know, the thing is, like, places like Best Buy now will throw you out if they see you even taking notes on prices.
You're kidding.
Nope, they've been doing it across the country for 5 years.
Bye bye, Best Buy. I think that they can't do that.
Well, actually, that's more like store culture. I mean, I was actually in a furniture store like 5, 6, 7 years ago, and there's a sofa that I kind of wanted, but I didn't know if it was just like the sort of bachelor ugly or if it was really ugly. So I took a picture of it and instantly got like set upon by the manager saying, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm just shopping for, did you take a picture of that sofa? We really don't let people take pictures of our merchandise.
Why?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, they explained it. Another person explained it to me that people who are there taking notes about store merchandise, now before this is before like the days of G1 Google phone barcode scanning, could be from a competitor who's trying to figure out where you're getting your merchandise from and try to basically.
And you kind of look like you could work in a furniture store.
Exactly. You know, it was the Larry Fine T-shirt, the cutoff shorts, the no socks. It basically said, you know what, upscale
jerk. I'm from Bruegel's.
Well, I think you have to be surreptitious about this because figure it out from the retail store's point of view. They're not going to want to be shopped that way, and you know they can throw anybody out if they want.
Yeah. Well,
the one thing I'd say is that they have a web. Most of these stores have a web presence. All they need to do is link it in. I mean, if I was at the Gap and I could be sitting there and I didn't have to, like, there's, you know, in San Francisco, the Gap line is like, you know, 20 people deep half the time. And if I could just sit there and scan, you know, try it on and go, yeah, that's what I wanted, and then scan the thing and order it and then just, you know, and know it's going to show up the next day or two. You know, I do that all the time.
Well, there was a Cyber Monday deal on VMware Fusion. Unfortunately, it's too late to get that deal, I think, unless they kept it alive. They keep keeping it alive. It was just going to be Black Friday, and then they made it Cyber Monday. 50% off, plus they had a $30 rebate for people switching from Parallels, which means you could get it for $10 if you were a Parallels user, and no, the deal is over. So, sorry I mentioned anything. Did anybody get any great deals on Black Friday, Cyber Monday?
No, there wasn't that many. Like, Apple's so-called deals were a joke.
They kind of sucked, didn't they?
5%, 10%. I was like, it doesn't really count until it's 20.
Well, I did buy some stuff. I mean, mostly they were DVDs because Amazon always has that just stupid, ridiculous sale. I got every episode, every season of House that I was missing at 75% off, and a bunch of other DVDs that I would have been eyeing for like 50% off. The only tech-related thing I got was Office Max had a very good deal on a Samsung 23-inch HD TV, full 1080p with a coupon. It was $279.
Whoa.
And I still think it's too early to spend a lot of money on an HD set, but that's exactly the sort of thing that you should be buying right now. It's something you can put in the kitchen, put in the bedroom, and you can still use it as a very good, you know, 1920x1080, monitor.
Monitor, yeah.
Your iMac.
Well, here's a DVD you might want to get for the Mac fanatic in your life. Available for pre-order. They say it's going to come out on the 15th. Rob Baca and Josh Rizzo did a documentary called Welcome to Macintosh about the community and history behind the Mac phenomenon. You can see the unofficial Apple weblog. I always call it the ultimate. The unofficial Apple weblog has a clip from YouTube that you can see a trailer of it. And the DVD it's an 83-minute movie, but there's an additional 3 hours of footage. I mean, interviews with, you know, the Kai Kawasaki, Andy Hertzfeld, Ron Wayne, John Maltz, Leander Kahaney. I mean, it sounds like it's just a really great DVD, so I wanted to give them a little bit of a plug. They're selling it at Film Baby. Pre-order is $19.84. You got to love that price. $19.84.
Same as Smackheads, is it?
Pardon me?
That's not the same as Mac Heads, is it? That other document.
No, this is a new one.
Oh, competition. Awesome.
Yeah. It sounds like, it sounds like a lot of people are in it. Not Steve, but it does sound very, it sounds cool. And if you've got a, yeah. So tell me about MacHeads. Is that out now?
I don't know. I haven't checked. I should, if only I had a computer in front of me, I could actually check it out.
If you go to MacHeadsTheMovie.com, you can see the trailer. Now it's still coming soon. So now there'll be two. MacHeads the Movie, also same idea. I think that's, you know, even the history of the PC is interesting, but the history of the Mac is just very engaging with a lot of really unusual personalities, and I just think well worth
I think we should do the history of Twit.
Someday, someone will. And this will be the day the mixer died.
And I think we should hire Anna Kournikova to play you.
Okay, I'm down with that.
God, there's an Eastern European track star there's a video on YouTube of a recent mate that I think will change your life. She really is quite a star.
Can you just send me the attachment and I'll open it on my Mac?
just double click on it. You're gonna need a special codec to make it work, but click on OK a lot of times and then get started.
I have no problem with that. App Store is depending on how you count it, 10,000 applications in the App Store. Actually, there it would have crossed that number except for several hundred that have been withdrawn.
5,000 are flashlights.
Yeah, right. And the rest are tip calculators. Thank goodness they're here. So you don't have a Delicious for the iPhone, do you?
No, I'm actually working on, this is the first time I've ever said this, I'm actually working on three different apps for the iPhone.
Cool.
There's sort of different theories of iPhone apps, and I think the way to go is what Daniel Jellicutt said. He called it sharp applications. Right? So rather than being broad, be
yes,
sharp.
Yes, I agree. Oh, I agree. In fact, I was looking at Pocket Express, which Handmark makes on every other platform, and it's really an omnibus application, you know, with movies and news and sports scores and stuff. And I thought this isn't right. This isn't what you want on your iPhone. It's okay to have 100 apps. Each one does one specific thing.
Yeah,
make them each 99 cents or whatever. I mean, I buy an app a day, I think. It's
Pangea
crazy.
Had the 99 cents sale. I bought quite a few Pangea games. Everything was 99 cents. And they're the ones who do the Bugdom and Billy Frontier. They do some of the best kind of ports of their Mac games. Is it very much different writing for the iPhone, Will?
No, it's not. And that's what's really amazingly cool is that I just kind of jumped in it. And after 2.5 weeks, I'm almost done with my first app. And
you want to tell us anything about it? Is it?
Yeah, actually, I'll tell you all about it because it's coming out soon and it's going to be free. It's going to be quote free. It's free, but it only works with Delicious Library. So it's going to be a Delicious Library viewer. So it'll be just a pretty fast way to look at all your stuff on your iPhone that you scanned in with Delicious Library.
And how will you see it via how will you see the data?
It's not going to, I'm not going to try to do the sort of full graphical shelves that I did on the Mac side because you don't really have the screen space to get a lot of info. So it's going to be, sort of look more like a contact list, more like the contact list on the phone.
Will it sync through MobileMe or how's the...
No, they haven't opened up any APIs to MobileMe syncing or to syncing in a dock. So the only solution I've been able to figure out is syncing over Bonjour. So you have to I'm trying to make it as painless as possible, but it looks like you just have to run the app on the Mac and then run it on the iPhone.
That's what 1Password's doing.
Yeah,
I use it. Yeah,
pretty much the only way you can do it right now, sensibly.
Cool. So you could take your catalog with you, basically.
Yeah, because, everyone wants to do this. Like, 100% of my customers, they write me all the time, and it's really funny. And it's really sweet, and, you don't want to make fun of your customers, but it's also kind of gets to be funny when, every single day we get an email saying, hey, I have this great idea. I mean, this awesome idea. Okay, listen to this idea. Listen to this. This is a great idea. What if you could look at your collection on the iPhone? And I'm like, no. Oh, my God. You know what?
Why didn't I think of that?
and I'm going to credit you. I'm going to say, when I come out with that, you can say that was my idea.
Of course,
it literally is every single day that we get a piece of email.
Isn't that funny? Well, I'm good. That's that look and the approval process, does it put you off? Do you worry about it, or is it, you feel like it'll be pretty? I mean, you're very well known in the Apple community. I can't imagine.
Yeah, the thing is, I think that could work for me and against me, because you know, if I do anything at all, like, there are a lot of apps out there, and I've been sort of keeping track, that are, you know, going outside of the APIs, and you're not supposed to do that.
Even Google now admits that they did in fact do that.
Yeah, and they're the first to just, you know, come out and admit it. But the problem is, I think, you know, because I'm a little higher profile, I think it also means that, you know, I have to keep my nose very, very clean, because,
right,
you know, Apple's going to be looking real closely at it and passing it around, and, you know, one of the iPhone guys could just be like, you know, hey, he couldn't have done that. There's no way he could do that. He right. must be using private API.
Is there a lot of pressure to not, to go beyond the API?
Well, there's just certain things you just simply can't do unless you go beyond the public API. There's sort of no really well, there's certain just hardware things you just can't get at, and
right.
so if you want to get at them, you have to go beyond it, and it's kind right. of maddening.
Right.
And I've been trying to find sort of very there's sort of in API tricks you can do to go beyond the API, like you know, like you're making a custom table, and you don't want to make a completely custom table. You want to start with, you know, Apple's table that's built in, the one they use in the contacts.
Right.
But you want to change the background color, and it turns out they won't let you. And so, you know, so you're like, well, what am I going to do? And so you try to find some, like, sort of trick where you say, look, I don't know what this object is that I'm talking to.
But if I did.
But if you respond to the word background color, then I would like it to be blue. But if not, that's cool. I mean, I don't know who you are. I'm just saying.
Right. You can't get in too much trouble with that, because if they change the API or whatever, you'll fail gracefully.
Yeah, and actually, this first app that comes out, I don't even do that. This one is just, this is so incredibly clean. I'm gonna, like, sort of, you know, release one that's totally clean, and then
sneak in the patches. Well, the good news is nobody at Apple listens to this show, so you're
no.
okay. Yeah, you're in the clear on that one. No problem at all.
It's just the five of us talking, really.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. And nobody else out.
In fact, if I can't get this show off the Mac, maybe nobody will be listening to this show. We'll see how well call recorder works.
It works good, Leo. By the way, yeah. I want to mention, you said something about Google, which tripped my ancient memory. Apparently, last day or so, they've finally fixed it so that iCal syncs with your Google Calendar.
Yeah, I haven't been able to get that work. Has anybody been able to get that work? I've been using BusyMac, you know, the BusySync for BusyMac, and that works fine. But has anybody able to, you know, I downloaded that they have this little stub toy, that calibration, that'll automatically get it working, and I've never been able to, it doesn't work. Anybody else?
I just saw it. I'm pretty excited about it. We run a lot of our production off of Google calendars.
I do the whole thing on Google Calendar.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited about being able to test it. But I just saw it.
Well, I don't ever use web apps, and so I seem to be like the minority. Like, every time somebody's like, .Mac webmail is down, I'm like, who the hell uses webmail? Run mail in the damn mail.app.
Well, and if you use webmail, why are you using .Mac?
You know? Well, I mean, you know, I might be like, oh, it integrates with the, because I mean, I have .Mac. I've had it since the beginning, and that's, I like it when it's up, but it makes me mad when they work on the damn web when I can't even sync my machine. I'm like, hey guys, here's an idea. Instead of adding features to the damn website of .Mac, look at pictures of your friends or photos, why not make it so I can sync my goddamn machine?
Well, I would love if you know, the nice thing is, you continue to use iCal, you don't really and you know, MobileMe synchronization and whatever, but to have it also appear on GCal is fantastic, if it would work. But I'm sure it does. It's just me. It says it's hooked it up, but it doesn't actually show any of the calendars, so we'll see if it works. But it's a good feature, and if you it's kind of hard to find. You have to read the help file associated with your Google Calendar, and it uses CalDAV, which I presume is like WebDAV, but a calendar-based sharing capability. Real quickly, before we get to our picks, because we do have a lot of picks, Mac Internet share hits a record 8.87%. That's according to Net Applications. They do a survey of based on browsers, I guess.
Windows drops below 90%.
Yeah.
Which hasn't happened probably in like two decades.
Yeah, Linux had a big jump. iPhone up 12% to 0.37%. It's still a small number. Yeah, but that's a big deal. Apparently, XP dropped considerably and Vista failed to make up for it. I think that's switchers. What else could it be? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be. It's got to be switchers. Let's see.
The software business for a couple of years now.
Say again?
I've been telling people in software business for a couple of years now that this is the best time to be a Mac software developer, because I released Delicious Library 1 in March of 2004, and normally what you see when you release software for the Mac over the last, 15 years is, you'd release it and for the first 6 months you'd do, pretty well, and then after that it would taper off, and after that you'd get like, $10 every 2 months, right? What's happened over the last 3 years since, because, I went almost exactly 3 years without a major, you have to pay upgrade. I upgraded software, but nobody had to pay, right? Mm-hmm. So 3 years without a for pay upgrade of Delicious Library 1. And what happened was I had the same year-to-year sales for the product for 3 years because Apple's market share kept increasing and bringing me new customers. And, so we didn't just run out of customers like we did at Omni with all of our apps in the past. And so it's a great time to be a software developer because, every time Apple gains another percentage of market share, that's like, I don't know, I'm, 10 million people or whatever. I don't know the real number, but that's another 10 million potential customers for you. And it's awesome.
Don't you think Mac people buy more software too? I mean, I think that even though it's a smaller number of people overall, we seem to buy a lot of software. We pay for shareware. I think it's always been a good business to be in.
We're the good guys.
Yeah.
Well, we've already proven we're willing to pay for something that just works a little bit better and looks a little nicer.
Right.
And so it makes us a high margin customer.
Yeah, it's people who are on the lookout for new cool things. And so that's sort of a nice pre-selection criteria. And the other thing that people point out, because you don't want to just sit there and go, "Oh, all PC people suck." One thing that people point out that I think is really worth, looking at is that a ton of PCs are corporate machines. They're sitting there, sitting on a banker's desk, and they're not allowed to install other software.
Right.
And so people talk about the why don't you program for Windows? You'd make more money. Everyone I know who's a small developer in Windows makes way less money than me. And small developers who develop for both have told me that the Mac side makes them way more.
Yes.
Well, we've been really, we develop plugins, and a couple standalone applications. And I know that the PC side has always been just the difficult side because there's a lot more tech support for a lot less sales, for us. Now, we make Keen software, so it's kind of the video realm. But it's just one of those things that it's just much easier. And just as you said, I mean, our market share just keeps on growing. As the market share grows or as whatever's happening, we keep on selling product without, releasing occasionally a new product.
Well, it's good to be a Mac developer. It's good to be a Mac user these days. Even though Apple isn't giving us big discounts for Black Friday, it's still nice hardware. And the latest rumor, which I think kind of is something Andy Yannacco probably stimulated, is that Apple will maybe announce a netbook-style computer for Macworld Expo. You got to take this one with a grain of salt because it's from an analyst who isn't basing it on any information. Who's just saying, "Well, I think it'd be a good idea."
Analysts are the worst. They never are right. Never.
They make crap up, I think. Yeah. They just make this shit up.
I think it's going to be a tablet myself.
Really? Did you make that up?
I make it up every single time there's an opportunity because I just want my tablet so badly.
It's going to be a pill, I think, not a tablet.
A blue pill.
You're right. Well, wrong end, close.
I think it's going to. I think the whole deal about Macworld this year is going to be the new OS.
Yeah, Snow Leopard.
There's not a lot to show with Snow Leopard, though. I mean, I don't think I'm breaking any NDAs by saying that. I mean, they just said it's going to be faster, right?
Yeah, improved. Yeah, better.
That doesn't mean there won't be good marketing around that same fact.
Well, though. But if it's not a lot of new features, it is kind of hard to say, buy this if,
faster.
It's Steve. There's a reality distortion field. Right. What do you mean?
Right.
I think that the there's a lot of great features in the current OS, but it's the most, it's the most unstable Mac OS I've used in
really
ever.
Leopard? Ever. Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
I have to agree with that. I think it is the most I don't know.
I have weird, you know, weird crashes. It turning off every once in a while. I love my Mac, but it is not the most stable version of the OS. They just added a lot, and there's a lot of bugs in there. There's, you know, and so I think that I'm very excited about the next version, both by having to making it more stable, but also I think it's going to be a lot faster. You know, that's the rumor, right?
Yeah.
Well, they did announce. I've got to be really careful here.
I understand you're a developer. You're under an NDA, but
what did they say publicly about Snow Leopard? Because they said something, right?
They've said it will not have any new features. It will just be cleaned up. I mean, that's the general gist of it.
Okay, good. Yeah. So the funny thing was when they announced that, and you know, Bertrand's on stage, and I love Bertrand to death. And he's up on stage and he announces and he says, you know, and today I'd like to announce that, you know, the big thing about Snow Leopard is, and then he has this whole slide. And he's like, zero new features. And the audience just went apeshit.
They liked the idea.
Yeah. There's 5,000 developers and they were just roaring. They were like, you know, oh God, thank you.
Just fix it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is that they're giving developers stuff because, you know, the whole, quote, make it faster. There's, you know, real code ramifications to make it faster. They're not just like, you know, putting a layer of undercoding on it. There's actually a thing. So developers are getting something. It's just, it's not clear to me how they would sell it to users, you know?
Right. I think they you know, there's, we, no one can figure out what would be a big announcement. I mean, Apple's updated the laptops. They've the iMacs, I guess they could update the Mini or the Apple TV. Maybe they could update. These aren't going to knock the world on its side. It's too early for a new iPhone. They haven't said anything particular about the desktops, but, you know, the Nehalem desktops probably, but that's not the kind of thing announced at Macworld Expo.
I'm very certain that they're going to show something that they're not going to ship.
The biggest selling...
No, you're probably right. It's one of those things where it's not ready to go yet, but we need to start
banging the drum,
taking out some headspace for this.
Yep.
So we're going to say, please have $549 ready.
I think you're
sometime
right.
Between May and June.
I think you're right. I think a netbook is a logical thing for them to do at this point. It is the big best selling category. In fact, all the early reports from Black Friday were that's what people wanted. They want these low priced, lightweight, underpowered netbooks, and the MacBook Air is not it.
Well, the difference, though, is that it's a netbook is a great device for Windows because you can make a very ordinary device that sells incredibly well. It makes absolute sense.
It doesn't have to be a Mac. Yeah,
exactly. When you make a Mac, it's the culture at Apple not to say, "Well, look, here is we whiteboarded what we can do a minimal Mac for, and well, what do you know? We can do it for $349, but it would be a cheap plastic case. It would be a lot of OEM parts. It would be just basically part A, part B, part C, solder it together, put a logo on it, and ship it. And I just don't see Apple doing that. I think that despite their best desires to ship a cheap netbook, if that's what they wanted to do, they would have to do something. They would just feel compelled to do something weird with the case or put this weird networking feature into it that would add $100 to the price and sort of drive it into MacBook area. I'm excited to see what they would do with the cheap Mac because I think they would do something that's sort of like a netbook, but not really. I mean, I would love to see like a tablet that has a keyboard component that you could optionally add to it.
And you would, I mean, I'd be happy. I'd pay $800 for an iPhone that's twice as wide and twice as high and has Bluetooth for a keyboard. I mean, I'd buy it tomorrow.
Two iPhones, one roll of duct tape.
I'd get rid of my iPhone. That'd be it. That'd be my little, you know, use a Bluetooth headphone.
It's weird. Sometimes I carry my iPhone and my iPod Touch with me, and there are times when I just sort of hold them in hands like one of the Nintendo's, thinking, geez, what if we were just to use, like, if I owned both of these and we were to have a software stack that said, you can use the touch as just the user interface to the screen on the iPhone above you. And so you could have, you know, variable keyboards, you could have variable control pads, you would have more screen real estate, you'd have text editing that got out of your way. What if the most intriguing thing to do to get this working would just be a bunch of development and a little $20 like bifold leather case to hold these things together?
Well, we'll see, won't we, kids? It's only, believe it or not, it's like a month till Macworld.
Ah, damn it. He ruined it.
What?
Isn't the best part of your year like the day after the Macworld Expo when you realize, wait a minute, I have no idea how long it is till the next show?
Okay. We don't know how long it is. The only reason I know is because I have 5 weeks to get a presentation together and I have no idea what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I'm supposed to, they called me and they're like, what's the title of your presentation at Macworld? And I'm like, the title is Will Shipley Talks About...
Yeah, that's my title, too.
I've been dodging my panel note. I mean, I'm doing not a panel, but a thing on podcasting on Friday and in the conference, and I've been dodging sending the notes.
Well,
so horrible.
We're all running out of time, but fortunately, the early bird registration has been extended. You have one more week. December 8th is the last day you can get the early bird deal. $25 for an expo-only badge, but you're going to want to go to the presentations. I don't think you need the platinum pass. That's $1,695.
Wow.
But you get everything. That's two power tool sessions, a market symposium sessions in the users conference, and the Mac IT conference, the access to the feature presentations, keynote viewing lunch, and a party ticket and an exhibit hall access. And there's stuff in between.
It's really, if you're in San Francisco or you're in the vicinity, or you can go. I mean, just the expo is just such a great experience.
$25 for the expo is a
so
great
much
deal.
Fun. It's a good day or two.
It's a great
deal. I would highly suggest it.
Yeah. Go to Macworld Conference and Expo, which is macworldexpo.com, and you have till the 8th to sign up, and we will see you there. We're going to do our show live from Macworld right after the keynote. We'll do the keynote wrap up.
Is anybody on the show speaking somewhere in the conference?
I am.
Yeah.
I think we all are.
Now, what are you talking about, Andy?
I'm doing a session on Thursday about my iPhone Fully Loaded book, and I'm doing one of those, like, I keep forgetting what Paul is calling these 20-minute, like, TED conference type things.
Oh, yeah, those are going to be neat. Are you doing one of those?
I'm doing one of those about how to build electronics hardware that could be controlled by your Mac.
Neat. Merlin's doing one of those as well, so Merlin will be there. And I'm doing a feature presentation, which means I actually have to prepare something.
A feature. You got to put echo in that.
Feature presentation.
Like the feature dancers.
I actually hired somebody. We're putting together video clips. I think what we're going to talk about is the past, present, and future of technology programming on the internet. So we'll start with, Computer Chronicles and take it right up to the present and then talk about the future.
History of the comb over.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be fun. It's gonna be very interesting. Talk a lot about tech TV and Twit, and then I think John C. Dvorak, Kevin Rose, and a couple of others who are doing interesting things on the internet with technology programming will join me on stage. I think it's gonna be fun. It'll be many never before seen clips. There's one of Dvorak demonstrating a 286 on Computer Chronicles. Can't wait to show everybody that one. I know you have to go, Scott, so let's get our picks of the week out of the way. And, Scott, if you want to lead off, you go right ahead. He's gone.
I think we lost Scott.
He said he had a hard out. Oh, dear. Didn't he just say something a second ago?
I guess not.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Never mind. We didn't make that hard out. Will, I didn't warn you ahead of time. We like to do pick every week, and if you want to pick Delicious Library, be my guest. But I'll give you a moment to think about it. It could be hardware. Could be software. I'm going to mention the fact that MicroTorrent, which is the BitTorrent client on the Windows side, everybody loves this in terms of its speed, its reliability, its user interface. They finally made a Mac version. Now, there are a lot of torrent programs like Azurius, Tomato Torrent, Transmission, which I think is excellent, available on the Mac, but BitTorrent's MicroTorrent is really is kind of the king on the Windows side, and notorious for its speed. So if you do download BitTorrents, it's free. It's well worth the download, I think I can say highly recommend it.
Now, how do you compare it to XTorrent?
I haven't used XTorrent.
I love XTorrent.
You love XTorrent? Try MicroTorrent.
Okay, yeah, I'll definitely check it
out. It's very clean. It's very simple. You know what I should probably do is get the URL. That would be a smart thing. I downloaded it immediately. I guess it's just utorrent.com. But the U is really a micron sign. It sorts out on the Mac as a U as well, so I guess we'll call it utorrent. But a very, very good, and there is a Mac version now. If you go to the front page, you'll see get it for Windows, but then click the link that says Mac uTorrent coming soon. See, they even say coming soon, but I just downloaded it, so they have to update their site. Mr. Alex Lindsay, what's your pick?
So my pick for the week is...
Oh, they're on. Who's that? Hello?
I was just yelling at Skype for a moment there.
Oh, you're here. You're here. You haven't gone anywhere.
Skype was doing one of those things saying, you know what? Let's talk about fudge. Andy, what's your favorite kind of fudge? Skype, I'm kind of in the middle of something. I like the kind with marshmallow. Skype, I'm in the middle of something.
Wow, you've got a better Skype than I do. I'd like to talk about fudge.
my pick. That's right.
Yes, sir.
I have to have two picks for the week.
Okay.
There's two things that I'm really enjoying. So the first one is it's called Live Station, and it's a little application that you can install, and it has basically my favorite news feeds, video feeds. CNN, IBN, Al Jazeera English, BBC World News, Bloomberg Television. So all the kind of the real news channels are available, and they're streaming,
cool.
And it's free, and it's got a great little interface, and it will just kind of play in the background. I mean, when I'm working here in Tokyo, when every channel is Japanese and they're all yelling something and I don't really understand what they're talking about. So it doesn't really do me a lot of good to watch the TV. But I can play this in the corner, and it's just a really nice standalone. It's not a web app. I mean, you, I don't know if you can watch it on the web or not, but it's a great little, standalone that you can log into right now.
These are probably all web streams. It's just aggregating them, right?
Well, you know, I know that the reason that I found it was actually through Al Jazeera English. I think Al Jazeera English, not the Arabic one, which is a bit propaganda, but the English one is probably the best world news in the world. I mean, it's just that you get really a much better view of what's going on through Al Jazeera English than anywhere else. And so the reason I found it was like that's the only place I could find a solid feed that was a reasonable resolution to look at, and I don't want to ever put Real Player on my computer again. So I found that, and it runs on Silverlight, which if you haven't gotten already, you should go out and install.
Yeah, everything's doing Silverlight now. That's the
Silverlight is a great distribution platform for a lot of this stuff. And so,
That's interesting to hear you say that.
Oh, I love Silverlight.
Really?
You know, when it first came out, I was like, we'll see. But it just seems to run cleaner than QuickTime or Flash. I mean, Flash is great, but and I don't know whether it's the developers and how they're using it or the infrastructure, but I just know that the stuff that's working, that's running on Silverlight has really, worked really, really well. And so I've been very impressed with it. So I would highly suggest Live Station. The other one is a little less serious. So these are the two my two extremes. The other one that I blame Aaron Mailer. Aaron is our producer for This Week in Photography, and he sent it to me, and it's all his fault. And I'm gonna warn everybody ahead of time because I try not to play games, but. Aaron sent me this thing called World of Goo. Have you guys seen World of Goo?
Yeah. It's great, isn't it?
I just started it. I'm not allowed. I'm keeping it to, I'm not, we have been like an hour ride to most of the locations that we're shooting on. We're all around Tokyo. And so I only allow myself to open it up while I'm on the bus.
That's a good idea.
Like at the end of the day, you know, we've been shooting for 16 hours and I just want to, do something else. And World of Goo is this crazy game where you have these stupid little dots and you're trying to build a structure to get somewhere. And there's all kinds, there's all these different challenges and it's kind of a weight distribution. You know, it's a really kind of this gooey ladder that you're trying to build without it falling over. And it's remarkably simple. And remarkably addicting.
Yeah.
So those are my two: Live Station and World of Goo.
Two excellent choices, very good choices. Andy Anatko, your pick, sir.
I have a pick that is Knowing who we were going to have on today, it's sort of a complimentary thing to Delicious Library. I love Delicious Library. I wish that every single application, with the possible exception of my word processor, because I don't like to stare at beautiful things while I'm trying to write ugly things, worked like Delicious Library. So there is a product that is pretty cool called IntelliScanner that has directs its kind of in the same category as Delicious Library. It's not, again, it's not as slick, it's not as cool, but it has two things. One, again, direct support for comic books, where once you scan in the barcode, it'll put the information from the Grand Comics database and all those other online databases, and will basically, you scan in the latest Batman, it'll get you, it'll get the artist, the title, all the characters, all the other cool stuff. It has another thing that it's more convenient when you're faced with a problem of having thousands of comic books that you just want to put in the database. For $129, you not only get the software, but you get a USB, like actual real barcode scanner. So it's so much easier with this thing in your hand to just go blip, 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 processing a box at a time, not really looking, not even caring what's being processed, so long as the numbers are being slurped in. For $229, you can go one step better, and the package will include a little like battery-operated independent barcode reader that's about the size of like a car remote starter. So you don't even need to have the thing plugged in, have anything plugged into your MacBook or in your iMac. You just go into your closet and just, you know, adopt the standard comic book long box hunch where you're just sort of squatting over it and just, you know, flip, 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 flip. I mean, the big problem is always getting that first trip, making your first trip through your library and get everything into the database. After that, it's a piece of cake. You know, when you bring home your 73 new comics per week, you know, to process each new stack. I like it. I started using it about a month and a half ago. The big question, as always, is going to be, am I going to be continuing to use it over the next 2 or 3 months as I keep buying new comics? But like I said, when it came to the problem of I've got all these long boxes, I cannot face the problem of scanning all these in. That was the one solution that worked for me. It also has a little bit like Delicious Library. It also has an online component. It'll publish your database online for free, and has an iPhone like online app so that you can view your database from any machine with a web browser or through your iPhone. So it's prevented me from, you know, buying my 7th, 8th, 9th, or 10th duplicate copy of, you know, Giant Size Creatures number 2.
Excellent, excellent, excellent.
This is the thing you can take to the store.
Yeah, there you go.
So this little IntelliScanner in there, and just go.
And now,
no,
and,
nothing. Just locking my car.
And now Will has a roadmap for where to go with the Delicious Library and his comic book support.
Alpha tester number 1, please.
it's right up to now. I only hit the Amazon database, and you know, so other databases is something I've thought about, but then, you know, like 2.0 already had too many features. So we definitely gave ground to some of our competitors that way by saying, look, we're not going to hit Library of Congress yet. We're not going to hit Comics Database yet.
Right.
We don't hit any of them yet. But
they should
watch out. Especially because they're so damn expensive, and I'm just like, you know, yipes.
The databases are, or the
our competitors, like, well, IntelliScanners, you know, the lowest price version is $175, and wow, you know, we're like $40. And
well, the comic version is $129, and that doesn't include the scanner. Does Delicious Library support external barcode scanners?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We have a whole wide range of USB, and we sell the exact same scanner that. The same Bluetooth scanner that IntelliScanner sells, and so it's kind of funny because, you know, we're talking to the exact same distributor guy, and he knows us both, and so a little rivalry there.
Good, that's
but no,
exciting.
I point people at IntelliScanner when they're like, well, do you do food? I'm like, nope, they do. Do you do comics? Nope, they do.
What you should say is that yes, it's a $179 add-on. Just to enter code IntelliScan in the store and. It might take an extra 3 weeks because we have to go through an outside drop ship.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't want their bug reports. So.
Oh, there you go. Well, it's your turn, Will Shipley. What is your recommendation for the week?
Well, if I can go outside the realm of computers, you're talking about Audible, and I realized that the biggest thing that hit me this week was I got Malcolm Gladwell's new book, Outliers on Audible, and I've been listening to it as I did his previous two books from Audible. And of course, he reads it himself, and yeah. He's got that, you know, amazing voice.
Yeah.
I think the word sonorous was invented for Malcolm Gladwell.
He doesn't look sonorous in person.
No, he looks. Yeah, I don't. He sees a weird duck. But yeah, I'm really mad. I started at TED the year after he spoke, and I've never met him. And I'm just like, damn it. But he's one of my big heroes, and so I'm loving the new book. I think it's better than his other ones.
Really,
I recommend everyone buy it on Audible because honestly, like you're kind of jipping yourself if you buy the book and you don't hear Malcolm reading
right.
it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much better to hear him say
I listened
things.
To The Tipping Point, and I would agree with you 100%. It really is good, yeah. You know, good, I'll have to order Outliers. I haven't ordered it yet. Fantastic. Great recommendation. He says it only takes 10,000 hours of practice, and you too could be an expert at anything.
Yeah,
I always think of it as 10,000 mistakes.
Yeah, that's another way to put it. If you only make one mistake an hour.
I can actually make them faster.
When did you begin coding, Will?
I started coding, about when I was 13, I guess.
So 20 years?
I've been doing it for, I'm 39 now, so...
25.
Yeah, 25 years of coding.
So you probably easily have 10,000 hours under your belt.
Oh, I have, yeah, way more.
Yeah.
But I think about it, and it was neat to think about, because as I'm listening to the book, I'm thinking, you know, when did I hit that 10,000 hour mark? And because there, you know, there's a lot of code that I wrote in the early days that I'm not particularly proud of, and then there's definitely stuff that I'm really
proud
of.
Well, he talks about that. I mean, there's a time when you break through. And oddly enough, no matter what the discipline, it seems to be about 10,000 hours. Good recommendation. Absolutely. We'll take that. Outliers from Malcolm Gladwell. And we're glad that it's an Audible pick. That just adds the beauty of it. I might mention that our friend Jeff Smith has new ringtones for Ringtone Feeder. If you're not a Ringtone Feeder subscriber yet, you ought to be. You can get the holiday ringtones have just come out. I just downloaded them all for your iPhone. Ringtone Feeder is kind of cool. It's a RSS feed, but it's like a paid RSS feed. So you get a password, and then you add it to your iTunes, and you just automatically get the ringtones. So it's very cool. I just downloaded the new ones from Jeff Smith and Ringtone Feeder. Thanks to Klaus Lovegreen and Jeff for sending that along to us. Ringtonefeeder.com. So that's a bonus pick. And I don't think it's very expensive. I can't remember what the price is, but it's just a few bucks. Well, we're done. And if God and Call Recorder willing, we have a show. We'll be back next week. Actually, as we're wrapping up, Dane just wandered in with the new Machionics mixer. So I'll be wiring it up, and by next week, we'll be redundant. Wait a minute. That didn't come out right. Hey, Will, I'm so glad you could join us. Will is the head monster behind Delicious Monster. You can get the Delicious Library there by going to Delicious Monster. Is Delicious-Monster, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, you said you'd give a part of your anatomy for that, and we'll be expecting that in the mail any minute now.
Oh, yeah. Chopped it off already.
No, just kidding. In fact, we'd love to have you back.
That'd be great.
Do you have a blog, right? Do you want to plug a blog or anything else besides the website?
I have a blog on willshipley.com, which talks about coding and life and stuff like that. I'm pretty easy to find. I'm actually on the first page of Will's now, if you just type in W-I-L with one L, which I'm really proud of, because for a while, Will Wheaton just totally owned my ass. But
take it back, man.
Well, he's still ahead of me, but I get to the first page now. I really think that's the new measure of you know, how cool you are, is you type in just your first name and you're like, come on, baby.
You Google.
If you type in Mojave Experiment, I'm like hits number 1 and 2 now, which I think is awesome.
Why is that?
Because I just ripped him a new one for being complete dumbasses.
And you get all the Google juice. That's hysterical.
Yeah. In fact, I actually bought an ad buy just to bring more people to my site because I wanted. So I actually bought the words Mojave Experiment.
Oh, that's funny.
It was awesome.
This is Microsoft's kind of nutty way to get people to like Vista by pretending. Well, first, the big mistake they make. I haven't read your. I'll have to read your insults. But the clear first mistake, in my opinion, is when you go to the website. For the first minute, all you hear is the complaints about Vista.
And
for most people, that's all they're going to ever hear. They say, oh, that's good. Okay, I guess Vista sucks. And then they say, well, nobody liked Vista, but we secretly showed them features from Vista and told them it was a new version of Windows because Mojave, and they loved it. They've kind of abandoned that ad campaign. They only show now that they don't even mention Mojave. They just show the little clips of people saying, I didn't know you could do that with Vista.
Yeah, it's like if we have an expert running the keyboard and showing you our Vista in a controlled environment on a machine that we set up ahead of time with software that we install,
you'll love it.
And I'm like, yeah, I would love to have a valet doing everything for me. You know, that would also be a good way for me to like eat breakfast, get dressed. I mean, shit,
everything's better that way.
Yes,
everything's better when Microsoft does it for you. Well, that's a very good point. Actually, I hadn't really thought about that. You're absolutely right. Read it all at willshipley.com with one L. That's the Call Me Fishmeal blog, which is obviously a tip of the hat to Moby Dick.
Yeah, it's only like two people have gotten that, so thank you. Like, nobody ever, they're like, what the hell?
What are you talking about? Why do you want to be called Fishmeal?
That makes no sense.
What's wrong with you? Alex Lindsay's in Japan, but you could still catch up with him at pixelcore.com. That's the site of the amazing guild of multimedia artists who live, work, train together. They don't have to live together. At pixelcore.com. Pixelcore.tv is the place for the podcast, including the incredible This Week in Photography that he does with us, the late Scott Bourne, who faded off. He probably had another photo shoot to go to. That's twipphoto.com for that podcast, and we'll give Scott a plug. He's giving away a lot of great stuff, including a trip to Yosemite after Macworld that I'm hoping to go on with my new, don't tell him, Canon 5D Mark II. Don't tell him.
He has one too.
He already got one?
He already got one. He's got one down there. I don't think he's shooting with it a ton right now, but I think he's just getting his head around it. But
man!
He's Scotty Warbucks. You know, he's just going to buy every camera that comes.
Mine's still on back order. I don't know how he got his so fast.
He's Scott. You know, he has his ways. He has his...
Is he ordering the D3X?
I bet you he will.
Of course. Why do I even need to ask?
He's got a D3 and a D700.
So. See, here's my question. Did he get all new Canon lenses? I thought he sold off his Canon lenses.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on over there.
I saw the McCaskills. The McCaskills, Chris and Don at Smug Mug got their 5D Mark II and put some 1080p video up on Smug Mug. Oh, my God, it looks good.
I know. I'm really wishing that I had been able to get it before I came here, because I'm shooting behind the scenes with the LX3, which is fine, but it's not the same.
720p don't make 1080p.
Well, it's 720p kind of,
right? You know, I mean, heavily compressed. Yeah,
I'm not that impressed with the 720p, I have to say, but it's fine. It's great.
It's good.
Sitting on set, I have something in my pocket. Every time something interesting happening, I just pull it out
and
shoot it. So,
Andy Inoko's the Chicago Sun Times smartest living reporter, and he is
no. Roger Ebert.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Roger Ebert's still there. Of course, he's number two, right after Roger Ebert. Actually, the Sun Times is a great paper. I've been reading more of it online. I guess because of you.
Thank you very much. It's got to help. It does what papers do best, in that good journalism, good ideas, and really. I'll obviously leave myself out of the picture here, but some of the smartest, most opinionated, and articulate people that I've. It's one of the few like news sites that I just read it just because I enjoy the way the people who contribute to it, right?
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. It's kind of won me over. I'm really impressed. And, of course, at the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, www.cwob.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now adjourned. Another Mac Break is broke.